My message this morning is entitled "The Trouble with Tribalism." Tribalism is one of the most powerful human instincts. We identify ourselves as members of all sorts of tribes, our families, political parties, race, gender, social organizations. We even identify tribally just based on where we live. For instance, we're probably pulling for the Panthers today against New Orleans, correct? Correct. Go Panthers. Go Hurricanes. Go U.S. Olympic team. One study actually asked whether or not if a person had a fatal disease, if they would prefer a life-saving diagnosis from a computer that was 1,000 miles away or the same exact diagnosis from one that was in their own town. And a large majority of people actually preferred the same information from a source that was a machine if it was local. Tribalism is pervasive. And it controls a lot of our behavior, even to the point of overriding reason. I mean, just think about the inhuman things that we do in the name of tribal unity. Wars are essentially and often quite specifically tribalism. Genocides are tribalism, wiping out the other group to keep our group safe. Racism tells us that our tribe is better than their tribe. Tribalism impacts parents who, in their relationship with their child because they married someone of a different color or a different faith or someone of the same sex. Even the denial of evolution and climate change or other basic scientific truths are frequently rooted in tribalism. Tribalism is undoubtedly powerful human instinct. And the thing is, before the rise of the nation state in the 18th through the 20th century, the world was mostly tribal. Tribes were united by language and religion and blood and belief. They feared other tribes and often went to war with them. And at most, a ruler could only impose temporary truces between tribes. But, you know, in the past 300 years or so, the nationhood has taken root. The idea of nationhood has actually taken root in the world. Members of various tribes have started becoming citizens and viewing themselves as a single people with patriotic sentiments and duties towards their homeland. As former Secretary of Labor Robert Reich has pointed out, over the last several decades, through technology, we have whittled away at the underpinnings of the nation state. National economies have become so intertwined that economic security depends less on national armies than on financial transactions around the world. Global corporations are playing nations off of each other so that they can get the best deals on taxes and regulations. Nations are actually becoming, again, less relevant in a world where everyone and everything is interconnected. The connections that matter most, again, are becoming personal. Religious beliefs and affiliations, nuance of one's language or culture, the daily realities of classes, the extension of one's family and its values, all are providing people with a greater sense of identity. So, now we find ourselves moving away from what could be a healthy patriotism and moving towards very damaging nationalism, which we've talked about, that's defined by tribal markings like race and wealth and religion and language. Dan Kahan is a principal researcher in the phenomenon called cultural cognition. He's found that our views are powerfully shaped so that they agree with the beliefs of the tribes with which we most strongly identify. Now, his research has also found out that the more that those views that are reinforced by tribalism, the more that they are challenged, the more we defend them. And ultimately, the more dogmatic and closed-minded we become. So that's to say, as I mentioned earlier, tribalism frequently overrules reason. As a matter of fact, that may be one of the most compelling attributes and also most damaging attributes of tribalism. As as absolutely irrational as genocide and science denial and immortality may be, it makes absolute sense that tribalism can produce those kinds of behaviors. We're social animals. We've evolved to depend on our tribes, literally, for our safety and for our survival. As Jane Howard, who was the biographer of anthropologist Margaret Mead, put it, call it a clan, call it a network, call it a tribe, call it a family, whatever you call it, whoever you are, you need one. We may not be aware on a conscious level of the influence that tribalism has on us, but then most of human cognition happens below the radar of our consciousness and is driven not so much by the goal of getting goods, or like making good grades or winning the Nobel Prize, as much as it's driven by, first, our need to survive. So it's a little wonder that tribalism dominates so much of how we behave, how we think and act, and how we treat each other. And it's hardly surprising that the more unsettled and uncertain that we feel, and the less that we feel that we have control over the things that are going on in our lives, the more that we tend to circle the wagons and fiercely fight for tribal success, looking to the tribe to keep us safe. Frankly, it should be no surprise that in these unsettling and uncertain times, that the presidential race in the U.S. is exhibiting so much tribalism. After all, for the sake of survival, we are basically hardwired to seek out tribes during times like this. So then what does that mean for America? Again, I'm going to return to the words of Robert Reich. The world's melting pot is changing colors. Between 2000 and 2010 census, the share of the U.S. population calling itself white dropped from 69 to 64%. And more than half of the nation's population growth happened from Hispanics. It's also becoming more divided in economic class. Increasingly, the rich seem to inhabit a different country than the rest of us. But, as I hinted at, America's new tribalism can be seen most distinctly in politics. Nowadays, the members of one tribe, calling themselves liberals, progressives, Democrats, hold sharply different views than the values of members of the other tribe, conservative, Tea Party, Republicans. Each tribe has these contrasting ideas about rights and freedoms. For liberals, it might be reproductive rights and marriage equality rights. For conservatives, it's the right to own a gun or do what you choose with your own property. Each of these tribes has its own totems, social insurance versus smaller government. And they also have taboos, such as cutting entitlements or raising taxes. And each has its own demons, even, the Tea Party or Donald Trump, the Affordable Health Care Act, or Hillary Clinton. Each has its own version of truth. One believes that in climate control and evolution, and the other doesn't. And its own media that each group has then confirms those beliefs. The tribes even are beginning to look much more different. One's becoming blacker and browner and more feminine. The other is becoming whiter and more male. For example, in the last presidential election, only 2% of Mitt Romney's votes were African American. The fact is, the two tribes are pulling America apart, often putting tribal goals over the interests of the nation. And all of that, all of that has an impact on spirituality. Specifically, it has an impact on practicing spirituality in a community, which begs the question of what the difference between a community and a tribe is. From a basically sociological point of view, a community can be a tribe and a tribe can be a community. But tribalism occurs when a community closes its ranks around an illusion of superiority. And it begins to exclude others for the purpose of increasing the feelings of superiority. A tribe invents markers of superiority that to outsiders seem totally fallacious. But typically tribe members use these marks as proof that they are better than the outsiders. Outsiders, however, recognize that the markers of superiority are simply false, unless, of course, they'd like to become a member of that tribe. Tribalism's sense of loyalty, superiority, and exclusion have actually ended up making it what appeared to be a good bedfellow for religion. As a matter of fact, the history of most religions, including Christianity, is just riddled with rampant tribalism. Unfortunately, it tends to be easier to recognize that reality from a distance and in the past rather than in the present and close up. We tend to miss it in the present. A wise and spiritually developed person is one who is aware of tribalism and resists it. While tribalism was once an evolutionary necessity for survival, in modern times, it's actually quite ridiculous because it is so immature and it's rooted in the illusion that some people are more valuable than others. And I guess that's actually more than just ridiculous. It's actually dangerous. It's not just dangerous, it's unnecessarily dangerous. You see, the origins of tribalism are very real, and at one time, it was very necessary. But in the modern world, belonging to a tribe is no longer an essential life ingredient for staying alive. As a matter of fact, in modern times, tribalism frequently has the opposite impact on life, from gangs to hate crimes and even including politically motivated anti-Muslim movements. Tribalism is literally costing lives across the world. The difficulty is that, as I've said, we are basically hardwired for tribalism. It's instinct. We seek it out without full cognitive recognition that we're doing it. So, how do you overcome something that's so deeply baked into our subconscious? How do you beat something that you're barely aware of to begin with? Well, the answer, at least my answer to that question, is deceptively easy, and it's basically staring us right in the face. You beat something that you're barely aware of by becoming more aware of it. Now, that's not a flippant answer either. I'm very serious about it. We have to educate ourselves about what tribalism looks like. And from there, we use the new tools that we've gained to measure, to decide if we're part of a group and identify with it because of tribalism. And that's a good start, but we then need some kind of measure if our associations with these tribes are the good kind or the bad kind. And that's where I think healthy spiritualism can play a very big role. Healthy spiritualism, as we've also talked about in the past, recognizes the connectedness of us all. And it frequently comes with a set of standards, a set of measurements by which we can assess if we are treating the world and treating others in a way that fully recognizes their value and our mutual connectedness. And with those kinds of tools, we can then measure the health of a tribe. And using that information, we can make better choices about the groups that we choose to associate with. Frankly, with what at times seems like an increasingly uncertainty about the future, and the very struggling middle and lower classes, it is of little wonder that tribalism seems to be on the rise. And as I pointed out here, that can be a very dangerous thing. But the good news is, with the appropriate education, awareness, and tools, we are all more than capable of eliminating negative relationships in our lives and moving to healthier ways of engaging and interacting with the world.